radio stations.
If you can hear my voice, you are listening to the Worldwide First Amendment Radio Network. If you would like to continue hearing these programs, there are several ways that you can help. One, you can make a donation or subscribe to your favorite program by going to firstamendmentradio.com on the internet and follow the instructions there. Two, you can sponsor your favorite program with your business advertising dollars or spend your dollars with those businesses that advertise on your favorite programs. Three, simply call in on live programs and tell them that you are listening on firstamendmentradio.com. Now anyone can do that one. You can find the call-in numbers on our schedule pages at firstamendmentradio.com. And finally, you can call 559-733-5002 and leave your name and address, and we will send you a support pack. Thank you for listening. You're listening to firstamendmentradio.com worldwide. Freedom is never free. We need your support today at firstamendmentradio.com.
Same here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. You're listening to Financial Survival 2000, and I am Melody Cedarstrom. Thank you for joining us. Listen to a little Bob Seger. We are still the same, and I'll be right back with you. And thank you. Sing it like Bob Seger, but I can say it. Some things never change. This is Melody Cedarstrom with Financial Survival 2000, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And again, thank you for joining us for this next hour. Boy, time just flies by, doesn't it? We're going into another week starting another volatile week here in the stock market and the gold and silver and oil. And with today being September 27th in the year 2004, and I'll tell you what, those years just kind of ticked by too. I mean, it's just incredible. I remember when we were all preparing for a Y2K, and it just goes by way too fast. So we got to take each day. And I would like to thank all of you listeners out there for all the great comments and support that I have received in producing this show. And your comments are always welcomed. I try to add things. So, I mean, heck, who wants to listen to me 5 days a week? I certainly don't. So, I also look forward to having Mr. Robert Chapman back this week. But until I speak with him, he is scheduled to be here on September 29th, Wednesday, at the 4 o'clock show. However, if you remember, when you're on vacation, it always takes a week or so in order for you to kind of get back into the groove, kind of get caught up on all your paperwork, and maybe just catch up on all the things that you did on your vacation. So you'll just have to make sure that you tune in and see if he's here or not, but I haven't spoken with him. So, but you can look forward to, he is scheduled to be here on Wednesday, September 29th on the 4 o'clock show. And remember, today I will be going over some inventory, the inventory closeout sale prices, and you have until Thursday to make sure that your payment is here for me to close out my corporate year end. And we will be going into the 11th corporate year here at Discount Gold and Silver Trading. And again, it's just amazing how many years, it just goes by so quickly. So if you blink, you just have to be careful, because you'll miss it. And with that, moving right along, a lot of things happening, but yet, you know, pretty much as we just took last week, and it just followed us right into this week. Gold was up $1.10 today, closing out at $409.20. Silver was up 13 cents today at $6.53. Platinum was up $4 at $872, and palladium followed right along at $3 at $240. And I'm just waiting for it looks like the Dow Jones. I don't have the exact last ticks of the markets, but I'll give you what I have on my screen. Looks like the Dow was down 55 points today, closing out 99.92. It broke that 10,000 mark. And many of you listen to, I have Charlie Bowden on the program, and when he's on this week, we'll have to ask him about his tracking. And he's following the 5,200-day averages, and I think what he'll have to say about that will be quite interesting to where the market just might be at the end of October. So also make sure you tune in this week. Looks like the NASDAQ was down almost 20 points at 1860. The S&P was down 6.30. at 11.03. And actually, the big one today, we're moving right along up close to that $50 mark for oil. And lots of things happening in the oil. Lots of things are happening. We also have a big meeting coming up this week with the world, global world kings, I guess you can say, and I'll talk about that in just a few minutes. But yes, crude, $49.64, and we might be hitting 60 in the very near future. So let's just go right along. Let's finish up with the news from Friday, and then we'll go on and get in some reports that I have. Friday, we talked about Hurricane Jean, and we still have 2 months of hurricane season to go, and the Floridians are facing that grim reality. Hopefully there will be no more hurricanes that they will have to endure, seeing their homes and their lives constantly uprooted. But I guess a hurricane came through on Sunday, and it was kind of strange because it pretty much took the same path as Hurricane Frances did 3 weeks earlier. homes left barely inhabitable by Francis clung in shreds to their foundations, broken and kicked into condemnable states by Jean. But they dubbed the storms as quote-unquote the sisters, and by some of the radio talk show hosts down in that area, the evil twins. And it astounded meteorologists by landing in almost the same spot near this town on Florida's Treasure Coast, a region of magnificent lagoons and inlets ringed by modest retirement homes and old money mansions. So, again, just a strange correlation with the previous hurricane. But there's been estimates of the damage insured property to $6 billion to $14 billion. So I believe all those storms were up there. The previous storms all caused tens of billions of dollars. But, you know, there's talk about with these hurricanes that you can also see profitability, increase in jobs. Well, the first report I have on that is the USDA is going to provide $500 million in aid. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has provided $500 million in hurricane disaster assistance for producers of citrus, fruit, vegetables, and nursery crops. The aid is to be available to growers in counties that have received a presidential disaster declaration for Hurricanes Charley and Francis. The USDA is to make additional aid for counties impacted by these hurricanes. My question is, whatever happened to crop insurance? I spent a lot of years in the insurance business. I spent 12 years in the insurance business. Several of those years, most of it was marketing, a lot of it was underwriting commercial insurance. It used to be that in farmers, and whenever you had any type of crops that you relied on for profit, you would have crop insurance. So if there was any type of weather disaster, you would be covered. So whatever happened to that, you know, again, we become not responsible for things, knowing that we always have the government to fall back on, all these aids that come out in times of disaster. And yes, I'm not taking away the efforts of some to provide disaster relief to some extent. But again, we all know it's there, so I think people have a tendency to take advantage of that. But other available assistance for hurricane victims include the USDA Disaster Food Stamp Program for more than 15 of the hardest hit Florida counties, more than $54.9 million in replacement food stamp benefits issued to 300,000 families, more than 2.5 million pounds of USDA commodities valued at about $3 million, and $5 million in special funds for baby formula and food. But, you know, you're going to hear that there's going to be economic growth from the hurricanes. Yeah, isn't that weird? Out of disaster comes economic growth. They estimate about 20,000 jobs will be created that otherwise would not have been. And actually, two-thirds of those jobs will be in construction. The rest will be in areas including utilities, retail, insurance, and business services. Another 2,500 jobs will likely be added in Mobile, Alabama, and that's according to economy.com. And let's see if there's anything else reporting. There is one hitch when it comes to forecasting the impact of the most recent hurricanes. When Hurricane Andrew hit in August 1992, most homeowners had insurance policies with a flat deductible, let's say $500, $1,000. Some maybe even had 250. But since then, many insurance policies have changed so that your deductible is a percentage of the estimated value of the home. So if someone owns a $200,000 home and the deductible is 5%, that person could end up paying $10,000. And, I mean, if that's the case, a lot of those homeowners are going to have to take out loans just to pay the deductibles, and they're going to have to cut back on spending, which will hurt the local businesses. So It will crimp their cash flow, and then you see these increases in oil. You'll see these increases in products, everything that they need in order to rebuild. But truly, does a hurricane really help the economy? And as I said, some will claim that hurricane damage is spurring economic growth in states that's ravaged by the hurricanes. We had Charlie, Francis, Ivan, Jeannie. And you know what? A lot of these economists, a lot of your mainstream media, they will look for the bright side. They will say, hey, they're going to be hiring 20,000 people. 20,000 people are going to go to work. But hurricanes, like war, and these people miss the point. They destroy the people's wealth instead of enhancing it. Repairs have been placed at over $40 billion. Insurance carriers and power companies have been drawing on storm reserves. But this money is being spent to replace and repair, not to create any supposed new wealth. And when you have people spending $10,000 and $15,000 just to make their deductible, that is certainly going to destroy the people's wealth, and it will not enhance it. But states, counties, and cities are spending vast sums to clean up mountains of tree debris, to repair roads and bridges, public buildings, equipment. Residents have already caught a whiff of higher taxes in the winds of the hurricane. And you know, storms might very well be good for Home Depot, might be good for cement and plywood makers and repair companies, but the money is being spent to get back to normal, not to move forward. So when you hear all the positives about these hurricanes and these people and the unemployment rates dropping and more jobs being created, let's think of that. Let's think of that article, the true story. And we have oil. And they're going to spin that too. They're going to spin it so that $50 a barrel is nothing. It's going to be $60 now. $60 is the mark where it will have a major impact. Not 50 anymore. Let's forget about when we were down in the $25. Let's forget about when we were at 30. Let's forget about 35. Let's forget about 40. Now it's 60. Now it's $60 before it's going to have an impact. I mean, like, what are these people doing? Where are they living? And but the new week kind of left off, like I said, like the old one. The new week is beginning where the old one is left off. You have share prices are tumbling in Asia and Europe. Energy prices are rising and again. And you know what? We better get used to it. It's going to hang around for a while. And over the next 5 years, you have a better than even chance of oil prices going up another $20 a barrel. And this person, Andrew Clark, he's a senior research analyst at Lipper, he's not taking into consideration what we have talked about a couple of weeks ago, and maybe I'll do it again, is about the reserves. He's not factoring that into play when he's talking about just $20 a barrel. If the current trends continue, Clark will see his target price in the next 5 weeks. Already, oil prices are 73% higher than a year ago. Already, the high and rising cost of energy is squeezing the U.S. economy. Wall Street braces for oil price squeeze on the third quarter earnings, and that reads a weekend AP headline. With crude prices at record highs and the winter heating season just around the corner, Wall Street is having a hard time dismissing worries about rising energy costs. A number of companies have cited oil prices as they issued third quarter profit warnings and reports. Those feeling the pinch include the highest energy consumers, air transporters who must pay more for diesel fuel, makers of agricultural products like fertilizer, and chemical producers. Interesting, consumers are spending less on energy than they have in the past. This is what the AP story continues. Oh yeah, we're paying less, aren't we? About 5% of their total outlay goes toward energy, compared with 8% in the 80s and 6.5% in the 60s and 70s. True enough, but consumers are spending about 50% more for gasoline and heating oil this year than they were last year, and that's the sort of price hike that gnaws away at discretionary spending. I mean, if you ever want to know the true word of spin, here we go. U.S. refineries are operating at 97% of capacity and are sucking up crude oil as fast as we can pull it out of the ground or import it, which is why our reserve person, Kevin Kerr, has steadfastly predicted $50 oil price. Last week, this guy scoffed at the notion that releasing oil from the nation's strategic petroleum reserve would dampen the powerful crude oil rally. That didn't do anything. Didn't do anything at all. It was like putting a Band-Aid on an amputated arm. And pretty soon we will see over $2 for a gallon of gas. Pretty soon that 10th-ounce Gold Eagle will be paying for a gallon of gas. In fact, you'll probably need two of them. You'll need a 10th-ounce Gold Eagle and a 1-ounce Silver Eagle to pay for your tank of gas. But there's a lot of growing concerns over Nigeria. I've mentioned Nigeria the past couple of weeks, and this is even after they find their boat, their oil tanker. I guess it's bigger than a boat. It's an oil tanker. But you have growing concerns over militancy in Nigeria. OPEC's number five producer are compounding worries about supply security in Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Iraq. All these factors create apprehension in the market and reinforce the view that we're on a knife's edge in terms of supply and demand. The uncertainties heighten the risk premium applied to this market. In Iraq, insurgents fired mortar bombs. For you, I say this every Monday, but I get to say it again. Hey, it's Monday. Give me a break. In Iraq, insurgents fired mortar bombs at the oil ministry building on Saturday, causing minor damage but no injuries. I guess Iraqi oil exports, temporarily at least, are as high as they've been since last year's U.S.-led invasion. And as we all know, they've been the target of frequent sabotage attacks. But one of the most interesting articles that I came across about oil and gold, as I mentioned, that the International Monetary Fund are meeting in Washington Friday, and the G7. And there's a report from the Dow Jones UK service last night that George Bush is being urged to signal a dollar devaluation of up to 20% by this Friday, when the G7 and the International Monetary Fund meet in Washington. And I have the article here. It was out of London, the Dow Jones Newswire. U.S. President George Bush is being urged to signal a dollar devaluation of up to 20% to rebalance the global economy ahead of Friday's group of seven and International Monetary Fund meetings in Washington. Senior U.S. administration officials in Washington have over the past few days tried to influence the White House and the U.S. Treasury to put pressure on the G7 to agree to a dollar depreciation in its final statement. Recent data have shown the U.S. current account and trade deficits running at record levels, and economists have said a dollar depreciation is needed to rein these in. So this is coming from instruction from the IMF and the G7, and that he is being pushed, urged, another 20% dollar devaluation. The promotion of economic freedom, opportunity, and growth throughout the world will be a key topic. G7 officials meeting in Washington will be representing Canada, Italy, France, Germany, Japan, the UK, and the U.S. officials from China will also be present. But the logic of a dollar devaluation goes something like this. With the dollar strong, U.S. goods are more expensive for foreign purchasers. And in order to put some kind of a dent in the U.S. trade deficit, which is a gaping debt monster for the whole planet, a weaker dollar would help to increase U.S. exports. However, for the Bush administration, this is about the worst possible time to signal a decrease in the valuation of the dollar. And that's, again, because we're just a little bit more than a month away from the election. And John Kerry is already trying to box in Bush on economic issues. If the U.S. dollar went down, or even if it is rumored to be heading down 20%, that could slam what has been $49 oil lately to over $61 a barrel. It could also send gold to $508 an ounce as soon as the move is widely recognized. That's not what the G7 wants, at least not overnight, but it's what the rest of the international community is expected to be pushing for in order to keep balance in the badly strained international economic system. The Washington insiders are pounding like heck on gold because they need to keep up appearances until after the election. And once the Congress is back, the draft is in place, and another war front can be opened, then the devaluation becomes more manageable because there would then be ways to keep unemployment about young people low by rapidly call-ups under the mandatory National Service Act. It appears to us that the big commercial gold players are driving down prices to load up on inventory for the pending move upward. It's just how it works. It's how their greed works. And here you have it, and here you have the Dow Jones UK service. They're the ones that are in bed with Wall Street, keeping everything up, and now they're coming out and telling you that the dollar is going to be heading downward. And even if it's just rumored to be heading downward, that could send gold to 508. So when I go over the inventory end of the year prices, I hope you have a pen, and I hope you will make those purchases. 508, it could happen. And it'll be interesting to see what we hear out of that meeting at the end of the week, if we hear anything. But you know, we talk about the Texas pipeline. There was a Texas pipeline blast that's now being investigated. Texas authorities today investigated a suspicious pipeline explosion north of Houston that forced the evacuation of about 250 people. There was a piece of heavy equipment that was apparently used to puncture the pipeline, setting off the explosion. There were no injuries. They consider the mischief a criminal act. They consider it mischief. So, interesting to see if they ever find out who created the mischief. But I guess you could hear the explosion. The windows shook about 30 miles away. There was a guy who thought a tornado might be coming because it sounded like a train. I guess whenever anything bad is happening, it's that old train coming down the road. But the pipeline is used to transport propylene, a volatile gas used in the production of resin, plastics, and gasoline, and they allowed the fire to burn itself out. And that was on the UPI, the only place that I found that report. The only place that I found that report. And, you know, when we talk about the economy, we talk about, you know, we're having the G7, we're having the IMF here in this country with all the major companies meeting. No wonder so many jobs are being outsourced. And now these U.S. corporations, because they might have received so much slack about offshoring, about outsourcing, that they're going to come up with a lot nicer word. So the majority of people out there that don't know any better will think that, well, gee, maybe they're putting a stop to it. So now the U.S. corporations will say that they are no longer offshoring our middle-class jobs. It seems that they have grown afraid of the rising public anger at the self-serving fattening of their already ample bottom lines at the expense of working families. They fear that there will be political backlash from workers, customers, Congress, and just plain old American patriots. But does that mean that these greed-headed CEOs are no longer going to be shipping out our manufacturing? That they will be no longer shipping out our professional and our high-tech jobs to India, Pakistan, Russia, and other low-wage centers? No. It just simply means that they no longer say the word offshoring. Instead, they're going to double-speak that we have become accustomed to. The double-speak artists of the corporate PR departments have coined new euphemisms. Rather than offshoring, they now call it remote global sourcing or right-shoring. Anything but outsourcing and offshoring. I don't know, to me that they mean the same, but I guess maybe to the normal Yahooer out there that they'll just think it's not going to be affecting him. I don't know, but a new report finds that offshoring, or by whatever name, is not only continuing unabated, but accelerating rapidly and expanding into new fields. If you're an architect, if you do legal work or tax preparation, if you're an editor or a radiologist, you can say bye-bye to your professional position. For the CEOs are putting these and many more on a virtual boat overseas, with about 80% of them going to India, where they can get work done for a third or less than what they pay us or you, the American. The report was prepared by Forrester Research that says that offshoring is increasing dramatically. Forrester's previous prediction was that the U.S. would lose 588,000 jobs to offshoring by the end of this year. Now, it estimates that 830,000 will be lost, a 41% increase. Nearly half of corporations surveyed say they're either offshoring jobs now or preparing to. Well, says one offshoring specialist, so what? It's free enterprise. We're trying to make money. Yeah, and so are bank robbers. The proper word for what these CEOs are doing is not offshoring, it's stealing. And they're stealing America's middle class future. I had a questionnaire from Lou Dobbs, and I never did get back to it, and I need to do that. Maybe we'll go over that tomorrow night. But one of the questions that I asked, if you knew the answer, was of these companies that outsourced their jobs, what was their increase in benefits and wages? I mean, it was something ridiculous, like 46, 49%. And then the next question was, out of the companies, out of the CEOs that did not do any outsourcing, what was their increase of benefits and wages and bonuses? And it was only 9%. So you can see where the money is truly going. And some of those companies, just to let you know, Lou Dobbs has companies that he has documented that have outsourced. I did the A's, I did the B's, I did the C's. So now I'm here at the D's. And there aren't very many D's. But just so the next time you're purchasing something and you come across one of these names, that you might think twice before purchasing it. And I know a lot of us will think, come on, Melody, everything is outsourced. Nothing is made here. I won't be able to buy anything. Maybe that's good. Think of all the savings that you would receive. Think about the amount of money that we would save if we did not purchase anything that wasn't made in this country and with companies that did not outsource. But some of the D's, some of these companies I've never heard of. Delco Remy, Dearborn Brass, Dayton Superior, Dawes Manufacturing, Data Ray Corporation, Dell Computer, Del Monte Foods, Delphi, Delta Airlines, Delta Apparel, Direct TV, Discover, DJ Orthopedics, Donaldson Company, Dow Chemical, Dun & Bradstreet, DuPont, DuPont Beaumont Works. So there's the D's. This is Melody Cedars from Financial Survival 2000, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. This hour is going by real fast. We're already past the bottom of the hour. And I got a whole bunch of stuff yet to tell you about. But I came across some reports. These were last week reports. I'm not sure if you might have heard about these, you know, with other broadcasts, but I thought it was interesting enough just to touch briefly on it, as we're talking about people who are losing their jobs and perhaps the economy is not what they're telling it as they're telling us that it is. But this is Alabama and Florida. And 10 Alabama employers laid off 50 or more workers in August. And those actions, defined as mass layoffs by the U.S. Department of Labor's Bureau of Labor Statistics. And that was compared with 24 such actions during the same month last year and 48 in July of 2004. So 10, that has gone down from prior months, but people are still getting laid off. About 1,080 people lost their jobs as a result of the August layoffs. Nationally, some 809 mass layoffs occurred in August. California led the nation with 246 mass layoffs in August, putting 18,000, almost 19,000 people out of work. So mass layoffs is 50 or more workers in California. Florida was the fourth largest number in August, and that led to 4,800 workers in August. New York and Pennsylvania was right up there with them. And these four states, Florida, California, New York, and Pennsylvania, accounted for 56% of all layoff events and 53% of all initial claims for unemployment insurance. Interesting. The manufacturer sector had 24% of all mass layoff events and 26% of all initial claims filed in August. The administrative and waste services sector accounted for 15% of events and initial claims filed in August with layoffs mainly in temporary health services. But as we're talking about production and layoffs, GM and Ford Motor are going to have production cuts in the fourth quarter and could cause layoffs. And this is out of the Buffalo newspaper. So this is relating just in that area, the Buffalo area. But the area has more than 12,000 union factory workers. And they are expecting some backlash, probably in the form of some temporary layoffs, but they say nothing extensive. You know, all these layoffs always come right before the holidays. They say they don't see any shifts being cut or anything like that. They are cutting production, but not the lines. But we haven't heard anything definite yet. Well, we'll just see. And, you know, I hope for those people in that area, it's not worse than what they're indicating here. But they are indicating anywhere from 200 to 400 in the fourth quarter. I guess on the brighter side, to some, the U.S. August home sales rise. U.S. new home sales rose 9.4% in August, and the biggest one-month gain since December 2000. Just remember that these people are out there purchasing homes that they can't afford. So when the new home or when the housing bubble finally bursts, there will be an additional 10% that will get hit even harder. This is Melody Cedarstrom, Financial Survival 2000, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I think we'll go ahead and if you have your pencils out, I'm going to go ahead and go over the inventory end of the year sale on some prices. And then I have some articles about Iraq. I have an article about spy imagery agencies that take a new role inside the United States. How about U.S. buys towns? That's right. We're buying towns now. Yeah, U.S. towns in New Mexico. Our tax dollars are buying towns. Isn't that neat? U.S. agents face violence at the border. Mexican officials seek open borders. And the classic article of the day is how the Oakland Police Department has halted its use of DUI checkpoints. That's the funniest one of the day. And then a little bit about the election. So maybe we'll get to them all. If not, I'll bring them over for tomorrow's program. But let's talk about the inventory reduction, the inventory end of the year, end of the 10th corporate year. And this is what I have left. The MS-63 Saints were a hit on Friday. And out of over 20-some, I have two left. But we'll get to those first. I still have one MS-61 $5 Indian for $370. The normal price was $380. I have one left. I have one MS-61 $10 Indian for $435. I have a 61 $20 St. Gaudens. I have three of them left. A 22, a 24, and a 27. The regular price on those was $560. The inventory sale, end of the year, special, whatever you want to call it, was $550. 61 $20 Liberties. Now, what amazes me is nobody took the special on the MS-61s. I guess not when the 63s was such a good deal. But I'll tell you what, if you want to save almost $40, between the 61 and the 63 Saints. These are the ones to get. MS-61, $20 Liberties. I have nine of them. The normal price is $560. The sales price is $545. And yes, there is only one catch. They're 04s. But I'm telling you now, there's no surprises. They're 04s. But you know what? They're beautiful coins. And if you want to save $35 a coin over the 63, and $15 from the normal price, what a deal. MS-61, $20 Liberties, they're beautiful. And what's wrong with 04s? There's nothing wrong with 1904s when you know that's what you're purchasing. What a great way to save some money. Because if we're talking about gold 500 in the very near future, if the IMF and the G7 get their way and the U.S. begins to devalue the dollar another 20% and gold's going to be at 508, just where do you think these are going? Where do you think these coins are going to be at? So maybe that 508 is a lot closer than what we realize, and it's going to pop. Gold will pop. And while gold goes up $100, these will be going up $200 and $250. So what's wrong with a 1904? They're beautiful coins. They're certified NGC, PCGS, ICG. MS-62 stained guns. I have nine of them. Nine of them. Beautiful 62 St. Gaudens. The price on those, the normal price is $570. The sales price, $500. I have $560, but that makes it the same price as a 61 $20 Liberty. Pretty good deal. No wonder I can't sell those 1904s. 62 Saints, sales price, $560. Nine of them. 63 Saints, two left. Normal price, $605. Sales price, $580. I have two left. I have 63 $20 Liberties, two of them. The normal price is $690. The sales price, $650. I have three 64 $20 Saints. Normal price, $690. Sales price, $650. Heck, gold only has to move up $5, and you'll make your money back on these prices. You don't have to wait for it to go up to $500. With those type of markup, if that type of sales price, gold only has to go up another $5 for you to come out ahead. So what are you waiting for? 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. It's kind of a dreary day here in central Pennsylvania. Cloudy on a Monday, but that should not stop you from getting those great prices for the end of the year, and you have until Thursday to get your payment here. This is all inventory in stock, inventory that's been purchased from customers, inventory 1904 61 libs that I didn't want to send to customers because I sent other dates, because I sent pre-1900s or a mixture of dates and pulled out the 1904s. So I couldn't have anybody saying, well, gee, you only ever get 1904s from those other firms. So here are those 1904s, and you can get a really good price on them. 1-800-375-4188. Things are going so well over in Iraq that even Powell says that the insurgency in Iraq is getting worse and that the U.S. occupation has increased anti-American sentiment in Muslim countries. But he has said successful elections in Afghanistan and Iraq would turn the situation around. What will turn the situation around is if we lead. We have seen an increase in anti-Americanism in the Muslim world. We will not deny this, Powell said on ABC's This Week. But I think that will be overcome in due process because what the Muslim world will see is that in Afghanistan, 10 million people who have registered to vote will vote on the 9th of October and bring in place a freely elected president. And I think we're going to do the same thing in Iraq if we stay the course. He acknowledged that, yes, it's getting worse. And the reason it's getting worse is that they are determined to disrupt the elections. Well, I'll tell you what my thought is. If they really wanted us to liberate them from Saddam Hussein, wouldn't things be getting better as we're getting closer to the elections? If they truly wanted to be independent and have a democracy, don't you think that things should be getting better closer to the election? But he rejected the notion put forward recently by Defense Secretary Donald H. Rumsfeld that it would be sufficient to hold elections in most, but not all, of Iraq. But the election will only be held in the vast majority of the country. So much for elections. So we have, there's an agency in the name of Homeland Security. America's agency is keeping a close eye, close to home. It's watching America. Since the September 11th attacks, about 100 employees of a little-known branch of the Defense Department called the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and some of the country's most sophisticated aerial imaging equipment have focused on observing what's going on in the United States. Their work brushes up against the fine line between protecting the public and performing illegal government spying on Americans. Roughly twice a month, the agency is called upon to help with the security of events inside the United States. Even more routinely, it is asked to help prepare imagery and related information to protect against possible attacks on critical sites. For instance, the agency has modified basic maps of the nation's capital to highlight the location of hospitals, linking them to data on the number of beds or the burn unit in each. To secure the Ronald Reagan funeral procession, the agency merged aerial photographs and 3D images, allowing security planners to virtually walk, drive, or fly through the Simi Valley, California route. The agency is especially watchful of big events or targets that might attract terrorists, like political conventions or nuclear power plants. And then the rest of the article basically goes on saying, we're not spying on the Americans. We're not spying on the citizens. This is strictly for safety. This is to protect you. That's what they tell us. And that's what the majority of people buy. The U.S. buys towns for terror training. The United States Department of Homeland Security is buying an entire town in the southwest U.S. for use in its anti-terror training Clias in the state of New Mexico will be bought for $5 million from the Phelps Dodge Mining Company, which built it from scratch in the 70s. The town, once home to 1,000 people, currently has a population of 50. Emergency workers will use the site to stimulate suicide bombings, anthrax attacks, and water supply poisoning. A local engineering school, the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology, is in charge of the project. Vice President Van Romero told BBC News Online that he hoped the purchase would be completed this week. Students will use the town to enact scenarios to learn to stop or prevent terrorist attacks before they happen. It's an urban environment in which we can control everything: the electricity, the water, and the people. Although Playas has been in decline since a copper smelter shut, the isolated town just north of the Mexican border is not a typical ghost town. In addition to 259 ranch-style homes, it features a six-lane bowling alley, a rodeo ring, a helicopter pad, an airstrip, a bar, a shooting range, and a swimming pool. The town's remaining residents could be offered work on the project. New Mexico Tech, as the engineering school is known, has trained more than 90,000 emergency workers since the bombing of the Oklahoma school or the Oklahoma City Federal Building in 1995. It also currently receives $20 million in grants from the Department of Homeland Security for its anti-terrorism program. Airline data. Airlines are told to turn over passenger data. Governments ordering airlines to turn over passenger data to test terrorist screening systems. Information on passengers who took commercial flights within the United States in June will be turned over to the government so it can test a new system for identifying potential terrorists. Well, I hope you did not fly in June. People will have a chance to tell the government what they think about the plan during the 30-day comment period, federal officials said. The TSA hopes to learn from its experience. The agency is pledging to protect passengers' privacy and taking steps to make sure the system is technologically feasible. Private advocates and the airlines are skeptical. Well, I know this is one person that's skeptical when you have the U.S. buying pounds and everything else. I'm going to go right to my article of the day. Just in case we're running out of time.
This is Nicholas from Presence of God Ministry. Are you a believer that is looking for a way to understand Bible prophecy as it pertains to historic as well as current events? Do you believe a one-world government is predicted in the Bible?